There's a lot going on in the world, and every week as we plan the topic to bring to light and discuss with you in depth right here on the Saturday Night Special, we consider the news of the world and what we might learn from it if we commit to a discussion around a given story. Other days, we find ourselves down a rabbit hole of something not connected to the news at all. Maybe a topic comes up randomly, or maybe we seek it out to declare something like a timeout from the onslaught of news, or maybe it's just something we like. Either way, tonight's show is not much about the news at all, but is certainly all about a topic that seems light and easy, but deceptively so. And that topic is a look inside the history, science, and business of hot sauce. Humans have been using chilies and other spicy spices for thousands of years. We see evidence of it originating in Mexico, Central and South America over 6,000 years ago. And as soon as European explorers showed up, they wasted little time bringing it home to Portugal and Spain in the 1500s and into Africa and Asia. But it wasn't until the early 1800s that bottled hot sauces started appearing in the U.S., and just after the Civil War, when the iconic Tabasco sauce first appeared on shelves, by 2010, becoming the 13th best-selling seasoning in the U.S., just after the sauce used with the creation of buffalo wings. Hot sauces vary by region, from scorchingly hot chili oils in East Asian cuisine to the vinegar-based Louisiana-style sauces, Hawaiian chili waters, and thick pastes of chilies and tamarinds used in Caribbean cooking. And every seemingly subjective chili pepper hotness level is, in fact, quite measurable, with each ranked according to the Scoville scale, with the unassuming bell pepper at a Scoville ranking of 0, the modest jalapeno coming in between 3,500 and 10,000 Scoville units, all the way up to the hybrid Trinidad Scorpion Butch Tea Pepper, considered among the hottest in the world, at over 850,000 to 2 million Scoville units. With numbers like that, suddenly those bright little peppers and resulting whimsical bottles are not so simple. The capsaicin, that is the chemical compound that makes hot pepper hot, causes the body to release endorphins, so the rabid fanship displayed by hot sauce devotees is in fact quite real. It's no wonder, then, a simple combination of chilies, vinegars, salt, and maybe tomatoes inspires such devotion. So tonight we are going to talk with people inside the hot sauce industry, scientists, historians, sauce makers, community builders, and even a player in the hot sauce startup space. I'm Amy Guth, and that's all coming up tonight on the Saturday Night Special.
Small town in America.
This is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout mid-America.
Radio? Well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Time to climb up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
You heard the woman. I'm Amy Guth, and this is, in fact, the Saturday Night Special. And tonight, we are talking, as ever, about one big topic, and we're taking the entire show to unpack it. And that topic seems like it would be really simple, but in fact, there's a lot to it, and that is the simple chili pepper and hot sauce. We're going to be talking about the science of it, the horticulture. We're talking about the business industry part of it, the history of it, all of those things. We're going to be talking with people inside the hot sauce industry. We'll talk with a scientist who is director of New Mexico State University's Chili Pepper Institute. Who knew that was a thing? But in fact, it is. And he goes by Chili Man. So we're talking to him for sure. A by virtue of great knowledge historian of hot sauce who operates a store here in Chicago with sauces from all around and lots of knowledge about sauces. And we're going to be talking with a music industry veteran turned cookbook author, sauce maker, and hot sauce fan community builder. Also, we're going to be talking with the founder of a West Coast startup that is completely changing how we find and buy hot sauce from even the smallest of makers. As ever, we have a lot to do, a lot to discuss, and a lot to learn tonight. And we want to make sure that we give our guests plenty of time to share what they know. But I would love to hear from you throughout the program, especially in the back half of the show, about your favorite hot sauces and what you most love to pair with hot sauce. 312-981-7200. Esteemed producer Tom Hush will be the friendly voice on the other end of the line. Or you can find me on social media and tell me about your favorites there. So we will be right back to get the conversation underway all about hot sauce on 720 WGN. Esteemed producer Tom Hush is going to be having fun with music tonight. I can already tell. Tonight we're talking all about hot sauce. And we're talking about the history, the science, the business, all these different aspects of this deceptively simple topic. But in fact, there's really quite a lot to it. There's a lot of different, of really interesting aspects. I should know. I kind of geek out on this. That's kind of why we're doing this a little bit, because I think this is a really fascinating topic, and I'm fascinated by the many YouTube videos of people challenging themselves to down spicy things and do ridiculous stunts like that. But nonetheless, hot sauce is a very interesting topic. So to kick the show off, we welcome to the studio O'Neill Ryan, who is owner-operator of Pepper Palace Chicago, right here near the Tribune Tower. It's over in Water Tower. Welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Very happy to be here.
Get on up to that mic. Don't be shy. There you go. All right. So when we talk about hot sauce, it is so much of what you do. It is your life so much. What brought you to hot sauce in the first place?
I got involved about 12 years ago. I was actually a manufacturer's rep in the gourmet housewares industry. And my father, my brother, and I have the whole Southeast. And Pepper Palace Corporate is actually located in Sevierville/Gatlinburg, Tennessee.
Beautiful part of the country.
It's beautiful. That's what brought him here. He's actually originally from Wisconsin. He went down there for a wedding and he never left.
Okay. Well, it's beautiful. I can understand why. And so you were drawn to this industry. And was there kind of a steep learning curve of suddenly learning all about kind of the culinary end, the business end? Or was it like other industries you've been
in? Yeah. You kind of go learn as you go. But it's very complex. But you learn more and more every day. But I just saw the business plan was great. I mean, you go in, you're able to taste the hot sauce, which is what we do here in Water Tower, up to 50 flavors, and you get to try it before you buy it.
So people are trying them in the store.
Yes.
And there's so many different types. Can you run us through a little of those? I think when we think of hot sauce, we think of a tomato, spicy kind of thing. But there's, as I was just saying on the other side of the break, there's oils that are more with Asian cuisine and pastes and all these different kinds. What do you see people going to the most?
For us, it's a standard vinegar-based hot sauce, but we kind of put a spin on it. So some of our best sellers are actually tomato-based, and we use vinegar for preservative. But we're more about flavor 100%. So even our hotter peppers, the Ghost, the Scorpion, the Carolina Reaper, which is the new hottest.
That is the hottest pepper, right?
Right now, yeah. There's a Pepper X, and there's also the Dragon's Breath out of the UK, which are very hot as well.
But the names are so aggressive, these names of these peppers. And so the people that are growing these peppers, I mean, it seems a bit competitive. People are trying to create these hybrids in hopes of making the hottest pepper in the world.
Yeah, in fact, the Carolina Reaper was developed under the medical for curing cancer.
Okay, say more about that.
It's essentially the pepper will eat cancer cells. Certain cancers.
So it was developed for clinical purposes.
Correct.
And someone decided they should eat it instead. And
yeah, the guy who developed it actually, Ed, he's called down in North Carolina.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so there's this fierce competition of people trying to create the hottest pepper. And where does that translate into in the sauce? What is if the Carolina Reaper is the hottest pepper, what is the current hottest sauce?
Well, we make one of the hottest sauces in the industry, and it actually uses an extract that we developed also. So it has the Carolina Reaper. It also has habanero pepper for flavor. And then it has an extract that we made.
And so you've switched a bit, because at one point you were selling sauces from around the land, and now you've switched to a model of manufacturing your own.
Correct. Over in the last 3 years, we've gone 100% we've actually just in the last 6 months, we've kind of transitioned to 100% Pepper Palace product.
And is that in response to kind of industry demand? I think in a lot of ways, people are looking for more artisan, locally made sort of things. Is it in response to that, or was that
It's that, and it's also the trying to sell someone else's hot sauce that you can get on the internet, so we can't compete against that.
Ah, right. Amazon strikes again.
Correct.
Okay, so you have sauces with you. You walked in with a box of things.
Yes.
Tell me about these sauces that you brought.
Our best selling sauce is actually a three pepper blend. It's
okay.
Called Black Rose. It's got red jalapeno, cayenne, and habanero.
Okay. If I had a dollar for every time there was a hot sauce with a skull on the front of it, I mean, it's interesting that
yeah.
We're a little bit later in the program. We're going to be talking with a hot sauce maker who came out of the music industry, and so much of the aesthetic of kind of the heavy metal with the flames and devils and skulls and all that. It seems so prevalent on the marketing materials for hot sauces.
It's so much of it is about the label. I mean, people come in on a daily basis and don't even try it, and they just buy it off the label alone.
Really?
Absolutely. 100%.
It's like wine in that way. People go, oh,
yes.
I like the label or I like the name or something like that. And it also seems like a very male industry. Do you see a lot of women making hot sauces?
Well, I don't know about making, but they sure buy a lot, and they actually can handle the most heat.
Well, I could have told you that. I mean, I could have said that. I love hot sauce. Now, you have this other hot sauce that's like it looks like holy water. It's in a Bible. What is happening with this hot sauce?
That's our new hottest sauce that we came out with about 2 months ago.
That's with the Carolina Reaper extract in it?
Correct.
Okay, tell me the name of that one.
That's called The End.
Oh, my God. The End, it's called. I think that esteemed producer Tom Hush is going to try that one. I got to talk for 2 hours. So that's Carolina Reaper extract.
No, that's... We have the Carolina Reaper and the habanero for flavor, and then the extract is something that we made.
Oh, got it. I'm sorry. I'm not a pepper making. Okay. And so tell us about this one.
This one's a ghost pepper hot sauce that's
okay.
A tomato base. So for a ghost pepper hot sauce, it's not extremely hot.
Okay.
It's more about flavor. And I think the tomato has a lot to do with it mellows out the heat from the ghost pepper hot sauce.
And the brands that you see when you were, you know, in more selling other brands and selling other sauces, did you see it, what does it take really to build a following around them? Because it's not just heat. I mean, this novelty will get you somewhere, but it seems like there's a lot of different elements that will go into it.
Yeah, there's Hot Wands that actually has several different flavors, and that's a good one. Dave's Insanity has like several. It's called Dave's Gourmet.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that one.
Yeah.
And he has the little tiny one. What was that, Ground Zero, the little tiny
one? No,
bottle.
The Ground Zero is actually, what is that?
All I know is I got Ground Zero on my wrist one time. I spilled it and it made welts, like it chemically burned my arm. That was a very hot one.
Yeah, that's got extract in it also, but that's... So that's almost completely extract.
And oh, boy. Okay. Tell me what else is in this box that you have
we
here.
We also have another tomato-based Carolina Reaper sauce called Time's Up Tomato Blend.
So let me ask you this. If someone comes into your store or a store like it and they want to start learning about hot sauce, where do they begin? I mean, looking at the label will get you so far. Is it like wine that you just need to start trying them and decide what you like?
Well, I think one of the reasons why the Black Rose does so well, because it's right in the middle heat-wise, and I always go to that one first.
I'll be the judge of this. Let's see. Oh, boy. Oh, yeah, that's good. That's got like a good kind of garlicky sort of flavor to it.
It's got garlic and ginger in it.
Yeah. Oh, he's brought spoons for me. He wants me to cough on the air.
It's not that bad, actually.
It's not bad. Okay. All right, here we go. I'm sure it's going to sound really delightful for listeners to listen to me choke over hot sauce. Oh, no, that's good. That's like a good garlicky.
And so I use that as a gauge. So if it's not hot enough, I can go hotter. And if it's too hot, then I go to
I wouldn't
more
say
mild.
It's not hot enough. I mean, it's hot, but it's not. I'm not uncomfortable. Like
yeah.
I would put that on scrambled eggs or something.
It's great on eggs. It's great in pasta. Like I can use that more than a tomato sauce because it's not as acidic.
Okay, before the program, esteemed producer Tom Hush and I were talking about what you put hot sauce on, and he said buffalo wings, and I said no, tacos. So we are in the first time ever we are in disagreement about what the optimal thing to on which to apply hot sauce.
The answer is both.
What is your favorite?
I like it on eggs.
That was your third, right, Tom? Yeah. Okay. So what's the, okay, you have
that makes great wings, by the way.
That's a okay. So this is the black rose. What the one that you have that looks like holy water that's in a Bible that's very, very hot. Is that what's in this little tiny thing? What is that?
Yeah, I put a little bit in there for us to try.
Do you recommend I do so on the air or will I swear?
If you let me control the amount, you'll be all right.
Tom, help.
I do have to get in on this and just see how this goes down.
You've got to try this.
I'm so afraid of hot sauce, though.
Are you really?
Well, you know, at home, my home hot sauce is Tapatio.
That's light.
Yeah.
You're
lightweight. And I am a lightweight when it comes to the
That's
hot
like
sauce.
That's like the Michelob Ultra of hot sauce.
Low calorie.
Okay. I just want to describe for listeners. Let me also say, I think radio food segments are very difficult because I think it is such a sensory experience. I grew up, my dad worked in restaurants and I think that's, you know, I think it's a full sense experience. So I've always kind of shied away from doing food things on the radio because I think it's unfair to listeners to like, hear me eat this thing you are not going to eat. But I'd like to describe what just happened. O'Neill has just handed me a tiny taster spoon like you would get at an ice cream place, right? A teeny tiny thing. And he said, because you heard him say, right? You heard him say, if I can control the amount. What he has applied to this spoon is about the size of a match head. And he thinks that's going. And this is, okay, remind me what the name of this sauce.
It's called The End.
The End, and it is the hottest.
The hottest sauce you can buy, pretty much.
In the world.
For a sauce. Now, there are straight extracts out there that are hotter.
Okay. Oh, it smells hot. Okay, we may need to... Tom, you may need to throw to break if I'm freaking...
Oh, I'm prepared. I've got my hand on the panic button. I've got something on the spots.
If I give you a thumbs up, I just need you to just...
Actually, I can give you some of this, which is our best-selling item, which isn't hot. It's called Sweet Bourbon Glaze.
If I'm freaking out over this sauce?
You got to chase that hot sauce with more hot sauce.
Right. I got a plan. Let's fix that hot sauce problem with more hot sauce. Well, Harry Tynowitz left some cookies here, so I could chase it with cookies.
Perfection.
Okay, I'm going to do this.
Moment of truth.
This is the end.
Moment of goof.
Yeah, that's hot. Yeah, that's real hot. That's unbelievably hot. I'm not going to swear on the air, but that is extreme.
Is she sweating yet?
Mm-hmm. I can see it from here.
It's going to get worse, actually.
Great. I look forward to that. That is extremely warm. As per my custom, I'm wearing a cardigan and I'm going to take that off now because it's warm.
Oh boy.
Woo. All right. It's like that. Okay. Like I said.
You might want to turn down the air conditioning in there to like maybe 65.
Okay. Now let me describe it. So he handed me this little taster spoon. It is like a match head worth of sauce on it. And I touch the edge of that spoon. I barely have any of that on my tongue, and it is extremely hot.
You mean there's still some in the spoon?
Yes, there is still some in the spoon.
Most of it is still in the spoon?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Do you, O'Neill, do you regularly eat this sauce?
Yeah, I actually do it a lot of times with my customers. I wouldn't say I'm immune, but it doesn't affect me like it used to.
Well, there is some data that suggests that you can kind of build up immunity to sauces over time.
Everybody else uses gloves when they sample it. I don't use gloves to do it. So
really?
Is it really?
Is this stuff really that hot?
David, it is very hot. After the next news break, come down and you can have the rest of the spoon and you will see. I cannot feel my tongue right now.
Wow.
It is extremely hot.
I'll try it. I may not be able to talk the rest of the night, but
right,
I'll try it.
Right. What are you? He's handing me another spoon of something with a lot of something
in it.
This
is sweet bourbon glaze.
Oh, this is the glaze. Okay. All right. We're good. All right.
You'll see why it's our best-selling item.
That is very delicious. And that's for any kind of grilling or whatever.
In fact, I use this on probably more things than you can count. I mean, it's amazing on vegetables, on salmon, on chicken, on pork chops.
That's really good on salmon. It has kind of a maple-y flavor. Okay. What it did was add a flavor to my mouth, but it did not make up for the fact that I cannot feel my tongue at this particular moment.
Would you like a piece of bread for my sandwich? Because I'll be happy to bring it down for you.
No, Harry Tynowitz left cookies here because it...
That may not help.
No, it's going to be good. I'm just... it's warm is all.
Oh, it has flavor, though.
It does. It has a really good flavor. It is a little warm, but it's very good. I think it'd be delicious in a big pot of gumbo or something like that.
Actually, what I do is I take... one or two drops and put it in the black rose hot sauce.
You take the super hot stuff
yeah.
and put it in the black rose.
That's what it's great for, is that you can actually heat up other mild things and make it extremely hot.
All right. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Black Rose, that's the starter sauce. The end. It comes in something that looks like a Bible. That is what I barely ate and cannot feel my tongue at all. So if you're into hot sauce, I recommend that very, very much. What is your personal favorite of all of them?
The Black Rose.
The Black Rose. That's your go-to. That's your daily. Okay. Everybody, head to Water Tower. Visit Pepper Palace. Ask for O'Neill. Go there. He'll help you out. He will maybe hand you a tiny spoon with a little dot of the end on it, and I caution you.
And if anybody's out towards Highwood tomorrow, we're having a Bloody Mary Fest, and I'm going to be sampling our hot sauces out there as well.
Excellent. Okay. Where can people go to find out more about that?
It's on Celebrate Highwood or to either one of my Facebook pages, either Pepper Palace Woodfield or Pepper Palace Water Tower.
Excellent. Okay. Head to those Facebook pages. Find out about that. Go say hi to him tomorrow. I'm going to go drink a bunch of water and clear my cleanse my palate from the very, very
bread,
hot sauce.
Bread, not water.
It's supposed to be milk or bananas, David.
And definitely not water.
Definitely not. I have Crystal Light sitting here in front of me and cookies. That's where we're going to go with this. Anyway, we're going to take a break. We're going to get you to news, all the good stuff. On the other side of the news, we're going to be talking with the director and co-founder of the Chili Pepper Institute at New Mexico State University. We're going to get all into the science, the horticulture, all the cool stuff about chili peppers themselves. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hi there. It's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. And as ever, we pick one big topic and we talk about it all night. And while we usually skew a little bit political or social issue, I think we've all got a little bit of news fatigue right now. So the topic tonight is hot sauce. We're talking about the history and the science and the business of hot sauce and chilies and spicy food. And if you were listening in the last segment, we had O'Neill Ryan from Pepper Palace Chicago, which sells a ton of hot sauce over in Water Tower. He was in studio and he brought unbelievably spicy. And I love a good hot sauce, but he even got me with that one, which he claims is the hottest hot sauce in the world. So I believe him because it was really, really warm. But let us now switch to the science part of this. We welcome now by phone Dr. Paul Boseland, who is director and co-founder of the Chili Pepper Institute at New Mexico State University. Hi, doctor. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime we can talk about chili peppers, I'm ready.
Well, I was reading your bio on the New Mexico State University website, and it said that your nickname is Chili Man, which I was like, well, you're the Martin Scorsese of chili peppers, I believe.
Well, in New Mexico, chili peppers are very important, not only as a economic crop, but also culturally.
Yes, you know what? I spent a little bit of time in Santa Fe, and I remember when the hatched chilies were being harvested, this wonderful smell in the air that was so lovely.
Exactly. Yeah, we all have that sensation. And at the Chili Institute, we actually sell a candle that has the smell of green chilies roasting. And when people leave New Mexico and go back east, maybe even to Chicago, they like to take the candle back so they can have that smell of green chili roasting.
Oh, I was going to say, I need to order this candle right away because that is such a great, great smell. All right. So when we are looking at chili peppers and all the work that you're doing, why and how did you arrive at establishing your expertise in the chili pepper?
Well, I got hired here at New Mexico State University about 3 decades ago, and I was actually hired to be a vegetable breeder here in New Mexico, and I began to work with some other vegetables like cabbage, broccoli, asparagus, spinach, and chili peppers, and I realized, about a year into my position here, that I could spend all my time on chili peppers and not answer all the questions. So I always tell people I put all my chilies in one basket and watch that basket carefully.
Right. Watching it very, very carefully. And so tell us a bit about, actually, before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit more about the Institute itself and the work that you're doing. But let's actually back up, and I want to talk about history, because in researching this show and just my own interest in chili peppers and spicy food, it looks like people have been putting spicy chilies and spices and sauces on their food for thousands of years. What has that evolution been like from your academic point of view? And what have been the big changes in that as the chili pepper narrative, as it were, has gone along?
You know, that's a really interesting question, because when I first started, when I would do an interview like this, one of the questions that was always asked was, are chili peppers a trend or a fad? And nobody asks that anymore.
Right.
It has integrated themselves. The chilies have integrated into foods in our culture and our food style here in the United States now, where that's not asked anymore. But thousands of years ago, chili peppers are native to the Western Hemisphere. And when the first humans came to the Western Hemisphere, we think now about maybe 15, 20,000 years ago, they came in contact with a plant that actually hurt them. They bit into it, and we always say it's the bite that bites you back. And for some reason, humans embraced this plant that had this kind of harmful or hurting effect. And I believe it's because it was probably an early medicinal plant. Right now, you had mentioned that you had eaten some very hot sauce. And what happens is your body produces endorphins, a pain blocker, so that pain goes away. If I was to inject you with an endorphin blocker, the heat comes back. So we believe that probably the chili peppers were a medicinal plant and then slowly became integrated into a food plant. And the interesting thing is there's about 35 different species of chilies in the Western Hemisphere, and humans domesticated 5 species. So every time they came in contact, it was so important that they began to grow it and domesticate it.
That is very interesting. So as you're talking about that and the medicinal part and endorphin blockers and all that, immediately I'm struck with the idea of, what about tolerance? What about, can you build up, you know, my last guest was saying he gave me this unbelievably spicy sauce that was, I love spicy food, but that was at the higher end of my comfort zone for sure. And he said he's very much used to it. How does that work? How does the tolerance part work with spicy food?
Sure. When you first begin to eat, chili peppers, you do feel the heat right away. And over time, about a year, we say, you build up some tolerance. But you may never be able to really eat the super hots, those that have a million Scoville heat units or more, because you just don't have the genetics. And so really, there's two factors here. One, your body does build up tolerance. But the other factor is that you have the genetics. Everybody's different, that can eat chili peppers, you know, to a certain level. And in my career, I've actually met 3 people that can eat chili peppers and they taste no heat because they don't have the heat receptors. Really what you taste when you bite the chili peppers is the chemical called capsaicinoids attached to heat receptors, the same thing that tells you that you're drinking a hot cup of coffee or a hot cup of tea. And so your brain's tricked that you've got something hot. And we all vary in the number of those heat receptors. And so if you have a lot of heat receptors, you're kind of sensitive to the chili heat. If you don't have very many heat receptors, you're not. And so I've actually met people that have no heat receptors, and they can eat a chili pepper's like eating a bell pepper to them.
Wow, I can't even imagine that. I was reading about a couple of different types of chili peppers. And in particular, I was reading about it seems very competitive for people to try to create and outdo each other, trying to make the hottest pepper ever.
Yeah, that has come on. Well, I think I'm going to say maybe, I don't know the actual date in front of me, but somewhere in the 1990s, we discovered a chili out of India called the Buchalokia, which translates to the ghost pepper, that was 1 million Scoville heat units. And to put that in perspective, a jalapeno is about 10,000. And so, but this chili was so hot that it began a whole new category of what we call super hot chilies. And after that, we discovered one from Trinidad that was 2 million Scoville heat units. And so over time, people have begun to try to hybridize and breed a chili that's even hotter than 2 million. Pure capsaicin, the compound that causes that heat, is 16 million Scoville heat units. So we're at 2 million with a chili pepper, the pure chemical 16. So we still have a range to make a hotter and hotter chili pepper, I believe.
Wow. And what happens to, when you're talking about these people that don't necessarily have these receptors, and so this heat is not registering for them, isn't there a risk of, you know, tissue damage or something at some point?
Not really. That's a kind of an interesting point. One of the people that I met doesn't have the heat receptors in their mouth, but they had them in their throat. And they said, you know, I really can't eat anything spicy hot because it could hit my throat and I could choke to death. You know, my throat would react. And so really, if your body doesn't react to it, there's probably no harm. And in nature, birds do not have the heat receptors. And before there were humans, the birds dispersed the chili peppers around the Western Hemisphere. They eat the little wild chilpepines and spread the seeds. And so the birds were getting, you know, vitamins, nutrition from the fruits, and the plant was getting its seed spread. So it was a very nice symbiotic relationship.
Fascinating. And what is there any theory around the spiciness of the peppers as like a defensive role in nature?
Absolutely. Only mammals can taste the heat. And so the chilies evolved the chili heat to keep mammals from eating the fruits because we actually destroy the seeds in our digestive tract. They're not destroyed in a bird's digestive tract, but they are in any mammals. And so it was really to discourage mice, rats, other rodents from eating the chili fruit.
Very, very interesting. We are talking right now with Dr. Paul Bosland, who is the co-founder and director of the Chili Pepper Institute at New Mexico State University. Doctor, I have so much more I want to ask you if you're willing to stay with us through this commercial break. We do have to go to break really quickly, but I want to talk with you about some of the other work that you're doing at the Institute. If you would stick with us another minute
sure,
or so.
No problem.
Great.
No problem.
Wonderful. Okay, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we are going to continue this conversation with a man who goes by the name Chili Man, Dr. Paul Bosland from the Chili Pepper Institute at New Mexico State University, right here on 720 WGN. Find you. 720 WGN. As I said, esteemed producer Tom Hush will be having a fine time with music choices tonight because the theme is hot sauce. We're talking about the history, the science, and the business of hot sauce and chili peppers. And who better to get than the foremost expert on the topic, and that is Dr. Paul Bosland. He is the director and co-founder of the Chili Pepper Institute at New Mexico State University and has so much knowledge about the humble chili pepper and all of its fascinating stuff. And I appreciate you staying with us through the break. Okay, so when we think about spicy food, Doctor, we talk often about the Scoville scale, and you mentioned that is like the jalapenos around 10,000, and we're looking at some peppers that have been created now that are in the millions, and that's so very hot. But then when we start digging a little bit, some other terms come up, and that is sensory fatigue, which I think we might have just talked about a little bit when we were talking about tolerance. I feel like that word starts happening a lot when we're reading about the Scoville scale, but then also the ASTA pungency unit. So where does that fit into the measure of heat in a chili pepper?
Well, chili heat is more than one dimension, and what I've come up with is what I call the heat profile of a chili. And there's five characteristics, and people can use this when they begin to really want to know about their chili peppers, because each chili pepper has a unique heat profile. And when you eat salsa, you can tell what kind of chili's been used. And the five characteristics are, first, how fast does the heat come on? Does it come on quickly, or is it a delayed heat when you first taste it? The second one is, how long does it linger, the heat? Does it linger for just a few seconds or for literally hours? The third characteristic is, where do you sense the heat? Tip of your tongue, your lips, mid-palate, back of your throat? The fourth one is kind of interesting. I call it a flat, sharp heat. The sharp heat is like a prickly heat, like pins sticking you, where the flat heat is more of like somebody's maybe painted the heat in your mouth. And then, of course, the fifth characteristic is the heat level. We usually say mild, medium, or hot, or use Scoville heat units. For example, the jalapeno is going to be on the tip of your tongue or in your lips. It'll come on fairly rapid and dissipate medium, you know, within a minute, it'll be gone. Asian chilies come on very rapidly, and they dissipate real rapidly, and it's a very sharp heat, where the jalapeno has that kind of a flat heat. And then the habaneros are in the back of the throat. They're kind of a delayed heat, but then they can linger for a long time. And so, you know, when you eat a salsa and you kind of, you know, take a second or two and sense that heat sensation, you know what kind of chili pepper has been used. And that's important around the world because cultures have selected certain types of chilies that they want in their food. And it's really called a quality component. In Asia, you have to have that sharp heat or people will say, I don't really like the taste of this dish, because they may not be able to describe it, you know, to you, but they know that they don't like it. Where, you know, other places in the Caribbean kind of like that delayed, lingering heat that the habaneros, the Scotch bonnets produce.
That's really interesting, because right before we were talking with you, with our last guest, he handed me a tiny bit, just a drop of a sauce that had Carolina Reaper in it. And I, as you were describing these five elements of the heat profile, I was like, okay, it lingered. Okay, it was the tip of my tongue, not the back of my throat. And that's very interesting, because I haven't ever thought of it in those terms. I've just thought of it in hot or not hot, really.
Right, exactly. And we found that out kind of, we were trying to actually ship some product to Asia, and they told us we didn't have good quality. And we couldn't figure it out because, you know, it had good color, it had certain Scoville heat units, it had no bugs, you know, nothing like that. And the Asians were saying, we don't like the quality. And then we discovered this heat profile, and we realized, well, now we got to go back in and see if we can find a chili that has that sharp heat. We found one of our varieties here called Sandia. We now ship that, and it had the sharp heat, and now we actually ship literally, you know, thousands of pounds to Korea to make kimchi or China to spice their noodles.
And so when we turn to the institute that you've co-founded, the Chili Pepper Institute at New Mexico State University, and the International Pepper Conference, which I think is so fascinating, and I've got to start concocting a way to be there because that sounds really fascinating. So when we talk about just the academic discipline here around chilies and sauces, what are the things that are most kind of up right now in that discipline, and where people are putting the most attention?
Well, one of the things is that you had mentioned earlier that most people, when the first time they take a bite of a chili, it's heat. That's all they notice is heat. And so I've tried to use the wine analogy that, you know, the first time you drink wine, it's just the alcohol. But later on, you can tell red wine from white wine. And then later on, you can tell a Merlot from a Cabernet, you know, from a Zinfandel, as you study these flavors. And that's really the same way with chili peppers. They have all these subtle flavors. And one of the most interesting things that have happened recently was that we produced a mild habanero because I wanted people to see the flavor of the Capsicum chinensis species is what the habaneros belong to. And they have a very unique, different flavor profile than, say, a jalapeno or a New Mexican pod type. And I wanted people to taste those flavors. And so we produced a mild habanero. And now we're making a sauce out of that. You could say it's a hot sauce, but it's a mild hot sauce. And the taco trucks, the trucks that are producing the tacos for fish tacos, love it because the habanero flavors blend very nicely to fish. And so we've got a whole new kind of market out there now for this mild habanero hot sauce to go on fish tacos.
I think it's so interesting how I'm glad you said that about wine. I was sitting there thinking that when you were talking about the heat profile, that's not unlike the way we talk about wine after a while. But also, I think this is so interesting because it has the horticultural elements, but then also a great deal of chemistry and a great deal of culinary all together in this.
It does. I mean, I always say, you know, chili peppers is one of those neat crops that it's a vegetable, it's a spice, it's a medicinal plant, and it's an ornamental. Ornamental chilies are what you used to give people around Christmas time because they had little green and red fruits, the color of Christmas. And then in the 1950s, poinsettias began to be marketed, and they kind of pushed chilies out of the way. And so we actually now have a whole range of colored ornamental chilies. And I always joke with my, you know, tongue firmly planted in my cheek that we're going to let poinsettia have Christmas, but we'll take Thanksgiving, which is a yellow orange. We have Valentine's, which is white and red, Halloween, black and orange. And of course, we do have a Christmas that's green and red.
And indeed, if you've ever ordered food in New Mexico, people will say red, green, or Christmas, meaning I want both red and green sauce on my enchiladas, which is
exactly
a lovely thing I miss terribly about food in Santa Fe for sure. So you mentioned the medical aspect of that. What are the latest advancements when we're thinking about the medical aspect of chilies?
Well, as I kind of mentioned earlier, the chili heat produces endorphins, which block pain. And so there's a lot of use there. But it's also been shown to be effective against cluster headaches. It's also been shown phantom limb pain. And also, it's good for your making what we call a healthy digestive tract. Chili pepper helps our internals, our intestines and such, work better and function better. And so it's a very healthy kind of food to eat.
And so as you have just made chilies your life and all of your expertise and the work that you do, how often are you, I mean, is this a daily meal, like a daily part of your meal? Or on some level, are you like, I'm all chili peppered out. I'm going to not have chili peppers.
No, I say chili peppers is kind of like salt. We need a little bit of salt on every dish to add a flavor. And actually, the Chinese say that chili heat is one of the basic tastes, along with sweet, sour, bitter, umami. And so they think you must have some chili heat in a dish to have it a balanced flavor. And so, no, I eat it every day and I'm on many different things. But I tell other people, everybody eats chilies every day. They just don't realize it because the number one red food coloring agent is paprika, or what we call red chili powder, that has no heat here. And so if you look on labels, you'll see it in many, many food products, paprika, and it's the, you know, as a red food coloring. So we eat chili peppers. Sometimes we just don't know it.
There you go. They're everywhere. Thank you so much for being with us. I just love all of this knowledge that you have. This is all so very interesting. We would love to have you back on the program at some point because I feel like I could just talk to you for hours about the beloved chili pepper. They're so interesting. Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Paul Boselin, director and co-founder of the Chili Pepper Institute at New Mexico State University. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. You're welcome.
Thank you. All right. We are going to take a break and get you to news, all that good stuff, back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here with you on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks so much for being with us. You know what? Esteemed producer Tom Hush, I think that might be a little bit of a bucket list item right there because it's not every day that we get Motorhead playing as bump music.
No, it is not.
Nice. That's a thing that happened. All right. Tonight, as ever, we've got one big topic. We are talking all about it and unpacking it with the people who know it best. And that topic tonight is hot sauce. We're talking about the history, the science, and the business of hot sauce. Yes, I did try what is alleged to be the world's hottest sauce earlier in the show. I'm starting to feel my face again. So that's working out for me pretty well. I was nervous about trying it on the air, especially at the top of the show, because I was like, I got to talk for 2 more hours.
You handled it with grace and aplomb.
And I managed to not say any naughty words that would get me fined in doing so. So I got that going for me. I should go buy a lotto ticket or something. Now, continuing on the hot sauce party, we are joined now by Steve Seabury. He is the founder of High River Hot Sauce, and he is also the author of a very, very cool book. It is called Not Mash, but Mosh: Potatoes, Recipes, Anecdotes, and Mayhem from the Heavyweights of Heavy Metal. Steve, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, we are thrilled you're here. I appreciate you taking part of your Saturday to talk with us about hot sauce. So I'm fascinated by this book. I think it is such a clever title. But essentially, you have taken very spicy recipes, gathered them all together, but you have sourced them from people in the rock industry.
Yeah, it was. I work for a record company by day, and I was went to a concert and I saw Motorhead with Ronnie James Dio and Iron Maiden, and I got really, really drunk that night, and I got home about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, let me go get something to eat. And being a bachelor, I didn't really have much in my refrigerator, and I said, I wonder what Lemmy would eat right now. What would he make out of this stuff in the refrigerator? And in my slow and stupor hangover the next following day, I thought it was a pretty good idea. So mashed potato was born after that concert.
And so were you naming recipes after rock stars, or were you soliciting them from rock stars?
Yeah, what we did was we solicited what I did was listen to them and wanted to see if they want to partake in it. And, you know, the proceeds went to the Meals on Wheels charity. And, you know, we just thought it was clever and fun and mostly a stupid idea for a book. But it did get a lot of great reviews, and there's a lot of great recipes in it. So the probably my favorite one is probably the Lemmy one, because it's quite hilarious if you do make it.
And that's the one called Krakatoa Surprise.
Yeah, exactly.
That's excellent. And I'm sure you have you had so much fun gathering these recipes and interacting with all these rock stars to do it.
Yeah, you know, it was just fun, you know, because every time I work with so many bands, and you know, the only thing that we like talking about is food and sports. You know, I mean, we talk about music as well, but you know, you just how much can you talk about music? So we always talk about sports and food, and we have found that common bond. And so I thought it'd be cool to put out a book with some of the best rock stars in the world. And, you know, and the fans have been really digging it. The people that love rock and metal have been buying it, and it's been a really good seller every year.
Yeah, for sure. And so as you were gathering all these stories or all these recipes, who had the most surprising one, or who had maybe the weirdest recipe?
Oh, definitely Lemmy wins the weirdest recipe by far.
Sure.
Definitely out there. But no, there's so many great recipes in there. I mean, a lot of these bands and musicians, you know, why they were starting to make it out, trying to make it famous. A lot of these guys worked in kitchens and stuff because, you know, the flexibility of the scheduling and being able to do that and play guitar at the same time. So there's a lot of great recipes, and a lot of these guys are actually real chefs as well, you know, or, you know, play one on TV, you know. But no, there's a lot of great stuff. I love the Megadeth Pantera ones. I love the Zakk Wylde recipe. That's his grandma's spaghetti meatball recipe. So there's a lot of really good stuff in there.
Excellent. And so then what brought you to creating High River Hot Sauce?
Well, you know, as I said, I work for a record company by day, and I love cooking. I love spicy food. So a lot of the bands that are on the label, you know, a lot of young bands, developmental acts, you know, I always feel sorry for them because, you know, they're eating at Taco Bell or 7-Eleven every night on their truck stops. You know, it's always – I made a lot of bands, you know, some of my homemade hot sauce, and everyone loved it. They're like, oh, can you make me more? And the next thing you know, everyone's asking me for hot sauce. And I put together this big music festival, and Live Nation was doing a VIP ticket. And they're like, yeah, we need this special item. I was like, oh, we should do hot sauce. And they're like, perfect. We need 600 bottles. And I was like,
so, no problem.
Yeah, so I used one of my recipes, and I made 600 bottles, and it went like that. And everyone loved it. And that's kind of how High River started. I mean, just the passion of music and the power of metal, and everyone just loved it. We made it, we bottled it, and people are buying it, and they really love it. And we've been making hot sauce professionally now for 6 years, you know. So it's been a fun ride.
Wow. And so what is that process from deciding, okay, I'm going to make a batch of my hot sauce and getting it up to being bottled and having enough of it to give it to 600 people?
Well, you know, it was definitely tough. We went to an incubator kitchen here in New York City, and we just rocked it out. You know, made it in the fall, FDA approved. We made it in the thing. But now we're just so busy that we actually have a facility now that just bottles everything for us, and you know, we cook everything in 300-gallon vats. You know, it's everything is regulated and controlled, you know, through FDA, you know, regulations, and you know, it's legit. We're probably about 600-700 grocery stores now throughout 9 states. We're in 9 different countries now, and it's just getting bigger and bigger. I also organized the New York City Hot Sauce Expo, California, Portland, Oregon, Arizona Hot Sauce Expos, and I'm also the commissioner now for the Hot Sauce Hall of Fame. So hot sauce has been consuming my life now, and I love it. It's a labor of love. I got a lot of passion for it. It's a fun business, and you know, it's an amazing ride.
Now, I wanted to ask you about those expos, because it seems the community around hot sauce is really so important. There's so many events, and it seems like the people that love hot sauce really love hot sauce. I should know. I have a chili pepper tattoo. I am one of those people that really, really loves hot sauce. But I have to – we're going to hit pause on that question for a minute, because I want to ask you about the Hot Sauce Hall of Fame.
Yeah, was about 4 years ago. You know, I just have so much passion for this industry, and I've been really, really fortunate to hang out with like guys like Cajon, Blair, Dave Hirschcock from Dave's Insanity, you know, and really get to know these guys. And I'm like, man, these guys are like the Ozzy Osbournes, the Panteras of the hot stuff world, you know, my heroes and all that stuff. And I was just out there, you know, I was like surprised that there wasn't like a, you know, an organization or whatever that really championed and laid honor to these guys who really started this business for people like me and the numerous other people. So I don't know, I just talked to some people and I took it upon myself and we started the Hall of Fame and we actually do the induction ceremony at the New York City Hot Sauce Expo every April. And we're actually building a Hall of Fame as we speak right now. It's being constructed right today. And we're really, really excited about it.
Where is that, New York?
And it's going to be in Ohio.
I love it. I'm going. That's it. Done. I'm going.
Yeah, no, it's going to be cool. We're going to have you know, Mr. Hirschcock's straight jacket. The place is going to be beautiful. It's going to be everything that a fan of hot sauce would like to see. And there's going to be, you know, we'll be announcing very shortly. So, you know, it's going to be a pretty tremendous place. Very magical, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I'm very excited about that. What is the timeline on that?
You know, we're trying to get it, you know, at the end of this year, we're trying to get it rolling, you know, so it's being built right now. And, you know, we're going to have everything from gardens to a nice facilities where people can lay, you know, show honor and celebrate the pepper.
Did you hear the guest I had on before? He's the expert. He's Dr. Paul Boselin from He's the director and co-founder of the Chili Pepper Institute at New Mexico State University.
Yeah.
That guy, we got to get him there. We got to make a thing. Okay. I'm going to do a road trip. I'm going to go. We're going to get the.
Nice.
It's going to be a
that's
whole
awesome.
Thing.
That's awesome. No, the Chili Pepper Institute, I mean, that's, I haven't been there yet, but I know numerous people that have. And my friend Dick just went there and gave a speech. And yeah, it's like, it's definitely on my bucket list to get there.
Yeah, Dr. Boselin was really fascinating. He had a lot of really, really great information. Okay, so now I want to move to the expos that you've started. There's several of them that you've started. And I want to talk about that community and the hot sauce community, because it seems, as a female fan, it seems like there's a lot of men. And it seems like on all the bottles, it's usually a cowboy or something like that. It seems like a very masculine industry. What are the women doing in that industry?
You know what? That's a good question. I mean, it's definitely a macho, tough guy. Some of it is, you know, but now it's, you know, it's being in New York, you know, and traveling around the country doing these expos. There's a lot of females jumping on board because I think a lot of a lot of chefs are jumping on board because, you know, it's such a fun business. But no, everyone's really getting ingredient driven now. People are really, focusing on flavor that's just opposed to straight up just killing heat, you know. Mm-hmm. So one of my favorite hot sauces in New York City is from Queen Majesty, and the woman that owns that company she's like a hot sauce Jedi, man. She can make some good stuff, you know. So it's fun, man. It's becoming you know, family oriented, and you know, everyone's getting on board. It's been a really cool, fun trip.
As other aspects of the food industry, I'm thinking craft beer and even, you know, artisan cheese and bread and things like that have moved to that more artisan, local, handmade kind of vibe away from, you know, just the big mass produced thing. Are you seeing that also entering into the hot sauce industry?
Oh, yeah, big time. It's I view the hot sauce industry now where, like, the craft beer world was, like, 10, 15 years ago. It's like the Wild West, you know. It's, like, it's so much fun to travel around the country because you really get that artisanal local vibe. You know, like, guys in, like, Portland, Oregon are making sauces much different than guys in Arizona or even in, you know, the East Coast, like in New York. How I make my sauce is so different from my friends that make it in California because we're just using local ingredients. We're putting our indigenous spin on it, you know, and I love it because, you know, I'm trying stuff out last. I'm like, man, this stuff's really good. And they're like, no way, man, East Coast is light years ahead of us, you know? So it's always fun for competition wise and stuff like that, but it's definitely a camaraderie and, you know, everyone's, you know, big time family and friends. And, we all, you know, you know, bro down together. And, you know, so it's fun watching all these hot sauce companies grow around the country.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think it's really interesting I love to discover new sauces and go to, you know, there's always shops that have a ton of hot sauces, or we're even next up, we're going to be talking with the guys from Fuego Box, which is a subscription service where you can try a bunch of new ones that normally wouldn't be on your radar. And I think that's part of the interesting part, but that's to me so much mimics the way the craft beer industry is of people. The hunt and the discovery, for sure. So tell us about your sauces in particular at High River.
Well, High River, you know, we're from Long Island, New York. It, you know, I just kind of like put stuff in a bottle that I really love. I mean, like, if I love cooking a certain way or a certain protein, I'll make sauces around it, you know. And, we have six different sauces in our holster, and one of my good friends, Chris Santos from the Food Network show Chopped, he owns a bunch of restaurants in New York City. We just put out a barbecue sauce together, and I got a lot of friends that are in music. One of my friends, Chris Caffrey from Trans Siberian Orchestra, he's part of the High River team, you know. And we love our metal, and we love making hot sauce, and we love eating too, you know. So we always my stuff, we've won 10 Golden Chili Awards, which is pretty much like the Oscars of the hot sauce world. We've won 10 of those, you know, in the past 3 years. And like I said, man, we're just growing and growing and growing. And it's been a fun time.
And I love the names of your hot sauces. I'm looking at your shop online right now. You've got Hellacious Hot Sauce, which is very metal with the skulls and the horns and all that going on.
Yeah. That was our very first sauce.
Okay, that was my next question. Which one was first? So it was that one first. And then Tears of the Sun. And you know what I also really love about your website is how you have pairings. Like, it looks very, I mean, there's a lot of culinary detail to it where you said, you know, try it with this. In fact, Tears of the Sun, it even says... chicken, pork, fish, vegetables, hot dogs, tortilla chips, even a bagel and cream cheese. What?
That's the New York in me.
Hey, whatever works.
No, it's delicious. It's you put the, you know, if you got like cream cheese and bagel, you put some of that Tears of Sun on it, man. It's magic, man. People are like, holy cow, that is so good. I always mix up hot sauces with cream cheese. It's out of bounds.
Okay, I'm going to try that. We were esteemed producer Tom Hush and I were talking a little bit before the show about what we love to put hot sauce on the most. And I'm like, it's all about the tacos for me. But okay, I'm going to try it. I'm going to try it on cream cheese. That sounds, I'm down.
Yeah. Especially the fruit-based hot sauces taste really good with cream cheese.
Okay, game on. Challenge accepted.
My Tears of the Sun's got peaches, pineapple, mango in it, and it's so good. It's so fresh. You put that on cream cheese. People put it on ice cream, too, that sauce. Vanilla ice cream, it's the, you know, fruit with your ice cream, and it's kind of like melt and messes with your mind because you're like, man, ice cream's not supposed to be hot, but you're like loving it, so you just keep on eating it, you know. So it's a good time.
I mean, I'll try anything once. That I would be willing to try that. That sounds just weird enough. If you say it's good, Steve, then I'm going to give it a try.
You'll be calling me up thanking me on that one, trust me.
Okay. On your recommendation, I'm going to try hot sauce on cream cheese, and I'm going to try it on ice cream, just plain vanilla.
Nice.
Okay, I'm going to do it. All right. Well, Steve, thank you so much for being with us tonight and talking with us all about hot sauce. Again, the book is called Mosh Potatoes, Recipes, Anecdotes, and Mayhem from the Heavyweights of Heavy Metal. And the hot sauce company is High River Sauces. You can go there, highriversauces.com. Good luck with everything. Come back and visit us when the Hall of Fame for hot sauce is ready to be open. We would love to catch up with you again about that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time, and thanks for having me on the show. And go Chicago. You guys are awesome.
Thanks so much, Steve. All right, take care.
I'll talk to you soon. Yep, bye-bye.
All right. Well, that's fun. Okay, we're going to take a break, get you news here in a bit, all that good stuff. We're going to see if there's any ice cream and cream cheese around here to try hot sauce on. I don't know. He created the Hot Sauce Hall of Fame, so he knows. I mean, if anyone does, it's him.
He seems to swear by it.
He didn't even flinch. He was like, no. Ice cream, cream cheese, done.
I could see an everything bagel, cream cheese, or possibly some schmear and some hot sauce. I would do that.
All right, we got to go to Jewel or something. We got to go get some stuff. All right, we're going to take a little break. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Eisenhower vaccine. England's got a new queen. Marciano Liberace, satire, and goodbye. We didn't start the fire. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth on the Saturday Night Special. I never thought I would have this song as bump music. And it took me a minute. Esteemed producer Tom Hush is having fun with tonight's topic because we are talking all about the history, the science, and the business of hot sauce tonight. And we have been trying some very, very spicy sauces. At the top of the show, I tried what is possibly one of the world's hottest sauces, and I couldn't feel my face for a hot minute, but I'm all good now.
Did I get more of it than you did?
I don't think so. I don't know. How do you feel?
I'm fine.
Okay.
Then again,
guy.
I had an advantage. I did have a sandwich up here, so there was bread.
Yeah, no, I did not have that.
So, yeah, you.
What he handed me after he handed me what is alleged to be the world's hottest sauce was a spoon of more hot sauce of a different kind. So, no, I did not have the advantage of bread. Thanks, David.
It was fun to watch your facial expression.
It was fun to watch yours because you were trying to be so tough, but I could tell you were struggling.
No, it wasn't a struggle. It was eye-opening, literally. Like I told you, it cleared my sinuses right on up.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, wow.
Good
boy,
times.
That stuff is clear now.
Yeah, that stuff is called The End.
I can understand why.
Yes, I just put a picture on Twitter, and I put it on Instagram also. You can find it there of me holding the box of it because it comes in a little box that looks like the Bible. So it looks like holy water. Oh, my gosh.
Yes, wait. You're about to have a religious... You're about to have... The earth moved. Yes, indeed it did.
Yeah. You can find that at Pepper Palace. We were talking with our guest, O'Neill Ryan, who is the owner, operator of that place over at Water Tower. You can find it there. All right. Moving along with our topic, though. All about spicy, spicy stuff and hot sauce. The show would not be complete without Fuego Box, which is a really interesting company that has taken that subscription model and paired it with hot sauce in really, really interesting ways with a very, very cool result. So welcome to the program. Joining us by phone is Mike McAdams, founder of Fuego Box. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Hey, Amy. Thanks for having me.
So glad you could join us. I appreciate you taking time out of your Saturday to be with us. So tell us about Fuego Box for those who may not be familiar.
Yeah, it's basically a monthly or quarterly subscription for small batch hot sauces that you've probably never heard of that focus on, you know, you guys were just talking about crazy heat. These do not focus on finding the hottest sauces in the world, but they focus on flavor, so pairing with food and whatnot. And, yeah, we find the tastiest ones in the U.S., send them to you monthly or quarterly, and that's what we do.
Well, I first became familiar with Fuego Box because I got a gift. A friend of mine sent me a three-month subscription to Fuego Box, and I just thought it was so fun to open the mail, and there's this cool little box filled with hot sauce, and that was super fun, and it was great to try them. And what I really enjoyed was the very culinary experience to it, how you had little kind of pairing notes and kind of tasting notes, but also that little book that comes with it. How did you develop all of that?
Yeah, you know, it was just sort of the experience that we were going through when we were tasting these sauces, what we wanted to share with people. Basically, I originally started it, I got down this hot sauce. I grew up on, like, Tapatio, Cholula. Those are, like, regulars on the West Coast. And I got down this hot sauce rabbit hole and was just finding all these little hot sauce makers all throughout the U.S. and you know, just finding some of the tastiest sauces, you know, you'd ever tried, like just 10 times better than anything like available at my grocery store. But, you know, along with that, you found some also really, really bad hot sauces.
Sure.
So, yeah, so we, you know, we just decided to put it all together and have a tasting party. We did like over 100 sauces. The highest ranked sauces ended up being our first 9 sauces that we used. And that was about a little over 2.5 years ago. And now we're approaching this December will be our 36th box.
Excellent. And so does everybody get the same box every month?
So as you noticed, you got the box with the little tasting notebook that we make. And so that's everyone's first box. It's like a welcome box. You know, welcome to the club. Here's some samples. Here's a notebook to try it out. And here's 3 of the tastiest sauces that, you know, exist. And so that's, yeah.
And then as people go through the process and start accumulating, I'm thrilled to death because I feel like the entire my entire fridge door is just filled with hot sauces right now, and it's very exciting. And so how many total hot sauce companies are you working with right now?
So So we're working with probably over 100 right now. Yeah. So, and there's probably, you know, around over 500 to 1,000 in the United States alone.
Oh, that was my next question, if you had a sense of that.
Yeah.
So we've been...
No,
go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. So, yeah, you were mentioning, you know, it's building your fridge. I've got my own hot sauce fridge. I've got two of them, in fact, because it's just, it gets out of control really quickly.
That's a life goal now. That's good. I like that. I never even thought, people have wine fridges. Why couldn't I have a hot sauce fridge? I'm on board with this. So we were talking with our last guest, Steve Seabury, who's the founder of High River Hot Sauce, and he was recommending some pairings that were kind of unusual. He was talking about putting hot sauce on bagels and cream cheese and on ice cream. Yeah. What have you run into like that?
Yeah, that, like, you know, we have a black cherry Reaper hot sauce that we include from a company called Sam and Oliver. And for instance, you were just mentioning ice cream. It's amazing on vanilla ice cream. You know, some people wouldn't think about that, you know, but it's really good. Also, we do, it's weird too, but we have our own hot sauce called Zana, and we put it in margaritas all the time. So, it sounds a little scary at first, but, you know, since most of these sauces are focused on flavor, you know, we end up throwing them in cocktails quite a bit.
I'd be willing to try that. And like I said on the air a minute ago, like, I'll try anything once within reason.
I mean, if you're trying the you know, the end, I think you can try, you know, a margarita with some hot stuff.
Have you tried the end?
I have not. I would pass on that, personally.
Yeah, and I don't recommend trying it while you're live on the air to thousands of people.
Because... That is crazy.
But I can feel my face again, though. Yeah, I can feel my face, so that's the important part. And I can talk. I was like, I got to talk for 2 hours, so are you sure I should do this? And he goes, if I can control the portion. And he handed me a little tasting spoon. Essentially, the amount he gave me was about the size of a head of a match, and I barely touched that. And it was...
Yeah, is it on Twitter right here, that little spoon?
Yep. That's the one.
I see it.
That's the one. Yeah, very, very warm. So...
You no milk either? You didn't have any milk around?
No, I had cookies, and what he handed me, though, was a spoon of different hot sauce. He goes, here, this is easier. This is sweeter. It'll go away. I'm like, not really.
Oh, my gosh.
I just have a different flavor.
Going in the other order.
Right. Build up to it. And so you say you went down a hot sauce rabbit hole that led you to founding Fuego Box. What prompted that? Why hot sauce?
You know, I think growing up, eating a lot of tacos, you know, eating a lot of burritos and, you know, eating a lot of salsa and hot sauce. And I mean, that's what prompted it, you know, in terms of an origin. But, you know, I just thought this is something, you know, this is something I want to buy. This is something other people probably, you know, could find useful instead of, like, you know, tracking down this one hot sauce maker, going to their website. Maybe it kind of works. Maybe it kind of doesn't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, buying it plus shipping gets expensive. And then you get the sauce and you're like, this isn't anything, you know, this isn't delicious at all.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, to me, that's the coolest part of Fuego Box is these really tiny batch sauces that otherwise, I mean, one of them that was just sent to me was... New Jersey something barn. I don't remember, but it was delicious.
Yeah, Jersey Barn Fires Garden State Green.
Yes.
I was just going to ask you if you had any favorites. That sauce is incredible. That sauce was at Steve Seabury from High River Sauce. He runs the New York City Hot Sauce Expo, and I'm pretty sure that sauce won a gold medal there. So
nice. Okay. See, yeah. It seems like a very connected community, the hot sauce world.
It's everyone's, you know, it's an incredibly nice industry. Everyone's really helpful. Everyone shares with each other. We even trade hot sauces with our customers. You know, we'll have customers who home make their own hot sauces, and they'll send us a bottle, and we'll send them a bottle. It's just, you know, it's a sharing world. It's kind of got that craft beer feel to it, but at a much, like, smaller level at this point in time.
Yeah, that's a parallel that's come up with some other guests tonight, too, about how with that push towards more artisan and that the way we saw that happen in the craft beer world, it seems to there's a lot of parallels here in the hot sauce world.
Yeah, absolutely. And another interesting thing that I was thinking about in terms of that parallel is that the back in the day, the best beer used to be international beer, right? Mm-hmm. It was it was your Heinekens and your Beck's Bass, and, you know, that not too long ago, and maybe in still in some people's mind, you know, the best hot sauces come from, you know, different countries. Oh, I got this Peruvian hot sauce. It's crazy. But, you know, as more and more, you know, essentially this, like, craft maker movement in the United States is happening, you know, like, more and more people are able to, like, put together hot sauces, learn how to make hot sauces, grow different peppers. And, you know, in my opinion, there's nowhere better for the hot sauce world than the United States right now. And some people would argue the same about beer.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair comparison, or a very fair thing to say. So as you're going around doing the sourcing and finding all these small batch hot sauces, what is that process? Because it seems like they're so well hidden. They're very difficult to find individually.
Well, I would say most small makers who are looking to get the word out on their product now know about Fuego Box. In the beginning, it wasn't that case. You know, we'd track them down, you know, email them, call them, beg them to send us, you know, a couple samples. But, you know, now we're getting, like, a lot of incoming inquiries, and a lot of people are sending us sauce. We have probably 300, it's stressful to even think about, 300 backlogged that we need to test and try. We do not put a sauce in our box from a new company and without trying it at our hot sauce tasting parties, which is a mix of, like, expert hot sauce people, complete amateurs, and you just have the simple 1 to 5 rating. And so we have these hot sauce tasting parties, and that's the only way to get into our box is to, you know, do well at those.
And how do I get an invite to one of those hot sauce parties?
There's a secret email list that, you know, you might be able to get on.
All right. I'm gonna talk you into that.
You gotta fly you over to LA as well.
I mean, sometimes I find myself in California. That's a thing that could happen.
Sounds like part of the job to me currently.
Definitely. I need to do a remote broadcast from a Fuego Box tasting party. That's what needs to happen.
Oh,
definitely.
My God. That'd be amazing.
That'd be super
we
fun.
We will schedule one at that time just for you. No question.
All right. I'm totally on board. We're going to make this happen. That's a great idea. So what is coming up next, and what can we expect to see, or what do you hope to expand Fuego Box to be in the future?
You know, we don't have any huge dreams other than, like, continuing to get these small hot sauces you haven't heard of in your kitchen, on your dinner plate. You know, that's our real goal. These guys are making great hot sauces. It's hard to, like, you know, they aren't maybe the best at marketing. They don't really, like, know how, you know, other than, like, maybe grinding at farmers markets, which is just covering a small amount of people. But we want to keep sending these to everyone throughout the United States. We even do, you know, quite a bit of international business. And just letting people discover what these really cool people are making.
And so how can people find out more and connect with Fuego Box and all that good stuff?
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty much Fuego Box everything. So, you know, on all the social channels, just Fuego Box, F-U-E-G-O Box, and then FuegoBox.com, and hit us up. We're always there to help. We also, I know, you know, this is in Chicago mainly, but we just opened a little mini hot sauce showcase hot sauce store in Los Angeles. So, you know, stop by if you're in the area.
Oh, that sounds fun, a hot sauce store with all of the ones that you're shipping out in the boxes.
Pretty much like a lot of the past hot sauces that we've included.
Okay, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
All right, so LA listeners, you're going to want to stop by there and go to the Fuego Box store. And then if people want to sign up for the subscription service, what are the different time links that they can get?
Yeah, so, you know, I'd personally, like, there's a fun, like, if you're looking to give a gift, there's a few different options. You can do, like, a year of hot sauce. It's all pretty apparent on the website. But if you're looking to sign up for yourself, I'd recommend either, you know, if you're, you know, just getting into hot sauce, sign up for the quarterly free bottle box. You know, that comes every 3 months, 3 5-ounce bottles, $30, pretty simple, straightforward. That includes shipping and everything. If you're a fiend, you know, you're going through a bottle a week, you know, then get on the monthly 3-bottle box. That's where we're able to, like, that's where the price gets down to, like, a reasonable point. The single bottle box is expensive for us to make and ship and fulfill and stuff, so that's pretty high.
Sure, sure. So there's options. So everybody head over to FuegoBox.com and check it out. Thank you so much for being with us. Mike McAdams, founder of Fuego Box. We will see you on social media.
My pleasure. Nice talking to you, Amy.
Thanks so much. Nice talking with you. All right. We are going to take a little break. Come back here in just a bit on 720 WGN. We're going to let this one play a minute. That's the one. 720 WGN, it's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. As ever, we have taken one topic and we have gently unfolded it throughout the evening, and that topic tonight was the history, the science, and the business of hot sauce. We have had some, I feel like we have been on quite a roller coaster tonight, Tom.
We have been on fire.
Oh, I see what he did there. I walked into that. Okay. We started with O'Neill Ryan from the Pepper Palace, Chicago, and he brought us a lot of hot sauces, including a sauce that is alleged to be the world's hottest. It is called The End. It comes in something that looks like a Bible. It looks like holy water. And I'm like, y'all try it on the air. I'm good now.
It had the righteousness of religious fury. I can't even look at it. It burned me from afar.
If we were thinking straight, we should have had video, because I bet my face was classic when I mean, it's tiny. I put it on Twitter. I tweeted out the tiny little tasting spoon, and he put, I mean, a match head size dot of this sauce. And I even tried like a tiny bit of that. I didn't try the whole thing. And it was warm. We gave the rest to David Jennings.
The face you made reminded me of a high school student who just remembered that they had a like test that day. Just immediately the features shrank.
Look, I had my eyes opened. It was like, okay, yeah, it's there. Followed by,
okay.
It's working its way on my tongue from where I licked it.
It didn't.
And I'm like, okay, now I'm starting to feel my sinuses are getting weird and my forehead's beginning to get moist.
Okay, David, to me, it stayed on the tip of my tongue, but it felt like, you know, when you bite your tongue by accident or you burn it and like your tongue is sore for a couple of days, that's how it felt to me. It never hit the back of my throat, but your face was priceless because you were like, oh, come on, just give me the thing. And you tried it, and then you could see your face kind of like, okay then. So we did that, and I got to say, O'Neill was so awesome, and he brought us all like a lot of delicious stuff. We made Tom Hush try one called Time's Up. He thought it was pretty warm. It's good. It's good though, right?
Yeah, about the flavor part of it. Like once you get past the heat, you really start to taste the flavors in it, and it's a lot of fun there.
But that's a habanero, and the one that's called The End had the Carolina Reaper, which is right now, it is currently the hottest recorded pepper. And then we talked a little bit with Dr. Paul Boseland, who's director and co-founder of the Chili Pepper Institute at New Mexico State University. And I loved that guy. He had so much knowledge and passion and information about the science and art, really, of the chili pepper. I was sitting there taking so many notes as he was talking. He was so interesting and so wonderful. And he was really talking about how it's such a specific discipline, because it's a vegetable, but it's also a spice. It's medicinal. It has all these really interesting qualities to it. And he had so much knowledge about the history of it. Then we talked to Steve Seabury, who is founder of High River Hot Sauces and wrote a really, really cool and fun book called Mosh Potatoes, not Mash. Mosh Potatoes, Recipes, Anecdotes, and Mayhem from the Heavyweights of Heavy Metal. Essentially, he went to rock stars and he solicited spicy recipes from them. And it sounds like he had a whole heck of a lot of fun doing so. He's also, as he told us, he is creating the Hot Sauce Hall of Fame. Do not think I will not be visiting there, because that sounds extremely awesome. And I saw a couple of your tweets. Again, that's High River Hot Sauce. That's the one that he makes. And you can find that at highriversauces.com. And then we talked to the founder, Mike McAdams. He founded Fuego Box, which is a subscription service all about hot sauces, which someone gave me as a gift. And that's how they got on my radar. And I thought it was such a fun and cool thing to, it's like getting a little present every month, and you open it and you have these three hot sauces that are, you know, small batch, that are not this big mass produced thing. You're supporting a small operation. A lot of them are just mom and pops, and a lot of them are like they're making them on the side and they both have jobs or whatever. And it's just, I love stuff like that. That's super fun. So we have covered a lot of territory. Normally, you know, at this point in the show, we're talking about...
And everyone's still alive.
We're all still alive. Remarkably. We can all still... I can feel my face again. It's all good. You know, normally this part in the show, we're kind of wrapping up and talking about some big call to action. And this isn't that show. We intentionally stayed away from the big, heavy news stories this week because last week was a very heavy show. And so we wanted to do something just kind of just for the heck of it this week and give everybody a little bit of a break. I think we've all got a little bit of news fatigue. So that's why we picked the topic of hot sauce. But we will see you back here next week at 7 o'clock for the Saturday night special.